Now it's it. Hi. Welcome. Hi. Oh. Yeah. So, let's start. Well, I always find it a bit hard to know how to start something, how to start a lecture, where do I begin with? And, well, in this lecture we have these two main components, work and purpose, as you can see here. And, so I was wondering which one of these should I start with? Because we're going to go through them as separate concepts, but we're also going to mix them and think about them together, because that's the movement I've been at least seeing around me, the so-called purpose-driven work, this trendy statement. So again, I was wondering from which one of them should I start? And then I caught myself making kind of a silly joke about, using the title of one of the main books that I read that I'm bringing here, and I'm going to quote it repeatedly. I'm going to start with why. So, silly joke or not, I'm really going to start with why I'm bringing this topic and this lecture today. So it started when I was still in Brazil. I was working in a big shoe company as a marketing manager. And my last month there, we were receiving a leadership training from a consultancy bureau that works to incorporate the concept of happiness in work environments. So developing corporate culture and workplaces that care about how happy their employees are, both with good fruits for the employee and, of course, for the employer also, with good efficiency and results. And at the time, I took these two print screens from the consultancy social media. And the first one says, research shows how engagement at work depends on the happiness of the employees. So we can see it's a speech a bit more directed to leaders or CEOs or people, in a leading place, highlighting what it's necessary to have engaged workers, which will probably lead to more efficiency and more profit or better results. The other one says, GDP is the gross domestic product, and that is a country's monetary measure of how much products and how much value in products and services a country produces in a space of time. And the new thing, well, maybe not so new anymore, but maybe, the new thing is the GDH, which is the gross domestic happiness. So it would be like how a country measures the happiness that is produced in the country, and that's kind of trendy in some places. You can research more if you want to, but I think it shows a little bit the direction we are going. And there's a very interesting TED talk about it from Bhutan. It was one of the first countries that started with this idea. So if you want to look further into that. But closing my parenthesis, the phrase says, for the GDH, the well-being of a worker, it's an end in itself. The well-being of the employees, it's not just a means, but an end in itself, through which the biggest beneficiary is society. So this one, it's kind of answering that feeling one can have when we read the first one. They're not really interested in my well-being, in the worker's well-being. In the end of the day, they just want the profit, they just want the money. So this other statement is, it's trying to make the case that this is not the case, that this should not be the case, that happy employees shouldn't be seen as a tool to make more profit, but an end in itself. So we have these two sides here. Another thing that I ran into through this research was this very yellow image that was the cover of the Financial Times, I think in 2020, I'm not sure. But it was a whole campaign of this new agenda for capitalism. So I don't know if you can read there, but it says, capitalism, time for a reset. Business must make a profit, but should serve a purpose too. So here you get the idea of what's happening around, what's trendy. So more questions started to come to me as this subject got my attention, as I told you. And the training we had that I quoted in the beginning was repeatedly talking about scientific methods and how science shows that people that work with a purpose are happier, how people that find in their work fulfillment for their own purpose are happy. I could sense that the use of the word science here was kind of meant to imply neutrality. So it's factual. It doesn't really depend on your belief or your religion. That was the hidden message in it. But yeah, I asked myself, really, is there such a thing as neutrality? Well, I don't think so. I think, for every theory or concept, there is a worldview behind it. And the worldview that I could sense there, that I could smell in the air, was one in which happiness is the main goal or the ultimate purpose of a human being. That's the view. So a human being is made to be happy. That's what everyone wants, right? Or no? Yeah. So that's what I could sense there. Well, I'm going to have a little break now. I'm going to share a video from our company. And I think I quoted in the beginning, I worked with shoes for 10 years. So I'm sorry, this is a video from a shoe company. That's my reference word. So it's not a very, very new video, but they were quite, the beginners when talking about purpose in the work environment and in the way they were creating the vibe in the office and all of this. You're gonna see. So.
My name is Melissa Lucicignola.
My name is Phil.
My name is Rachel.
My name is Vanessa Lawson, and to my right, this is Michael.
My name is Donovan Robertson.
My name is Tony Shea.
This is Bruce.
My name is Abby Lawrence.
And this here is Mr. Becker. And him and I kind of started the new hire program back with three other team members about 5.5 years ago. Yeah.
The Southwest core values are deliver while through service, be humble,
be passionate and determined,
do more with less,
build positive team chemistry,
embrace and drive change,
pursue growth and learning,
Be adventurous, creative, open-minded.
Open the door for people. That's not one of them. Create funnel awareness.
Develop relationships or build relationships with open and honest communication.
How was the name of that?
That was well. Yeah. All
right. So it doesn't involve me being at work, but I walk. Because I went to the store yesterday to get ice for a party we had, and there was two 20s sitting in the cash register dispenser, like someone had gotten cash and not taken it. And a part of me was like, I could take this, and nobody would know. And then the other part of me was like, that would never be okay, and I'm going to wow the person who got this cash and forgot it, and I'm going to give it to the cash register, and I'm going to be honest. And I'm not saying before Zappos I would have taken it, but I will say Zappos, when you leave here and when you work here, you do become a better person just because of the core values, because of the culture, because of the directors and the leadership. And it does take you outside of the company, and you do talk about the company a lot, and you think about things before you do them. And that's what I thought.
You're representing Zappos, whether you're at the office or outside the office, and so definitely always try to act in a way that's consistent with both our core values that we have as a company, which basically are also my own personal values, and also keeping in mind kind of the overall mission of the company, which is about delivering happiness.
We are about delivering happiness. We really want to, even if it's just for a moment, change somebody's life when they open up that box and they get something that maybe they've been waiting for, something they need, something for their kids or their family or their loved one that they've been wanting to get. And for that moment, we're able to take them out of their place and put them in that happy place, put them in that setting where they really experience something great. For me, that's pretty awesome to be able to do that. And to know that we do that on a regular basis, and we're not thinking about just the bottom line, that's a great purpose. It's a reason to get out of bed in the morning.
We all believe in the same thing. We're all wearing, you know, metaphorically the same thing. At least we all have the same guidelines in which we go through our daily routine, not only just in the office, but outside of the office as well.
And I think with vision, I mean, if we're talking about, like, how do we get invested in, like, new concepts, I think it's because we share the same core values. And so, like, even when we started, announcing, like, our new vision was delivering happiness, like, it just makes sense. It's, like, the right progression because, again, we share the same values. So we were kind of excited to take it beyond just our culture and taking it. It wasn't a surprise at all. We were really excited to have it.
Okay, that's enough. So has any of you seen it before? No? And have you heard about Zappos? Do you know what they do? They are this, yeah? I think in America probably it's more common, right? It's more known. Yeah, so they have this shoes e-commerce. And they have shoe e-commerce, yeah. So they have received many prizes. In customer service and things like that, so they have some cases around it. So yeah, but don't send your CVs still to Zappos. Okay, let's talk a little bit further about it. So some of you might disagree, maybe, but let's be honest, it's quite attractive, isn't it? Some part of us wants to work in that environment and in that vibe, and you know, that all that positive and fun place. Well, so why do these ideas attract us so much? Is it marketing? Well, yes, it can be. They can produce a good video. It's not the case here. It's not very good, quite old, but they know how to build a narrative and to put a nice music and, you know, to touch our hearts and things like that. But it's more than that. One can think that marketing creates desire and ideas in people in order to sell something. But it doesn't, not in a deeper level, because it usually feeds from longings and desires that we already have as human beings. And that's why also marketing has been so close to neuroscience lately. So what does that show us? That we, as human beings, we long for meaning and purpose in our lives. This is a book that I'm going to quote a lot today. It's The Call from Oz Guinness. It's from the library if you want to read it. And Oz Guinness, the author of the book, he says that as modern people, we are all on a search for significance. We desire to make a difference. We long to have a legacy. We yearn, as Ralph Waldo Emerson put it, to leave the world a bit better. Our passion is to know that we are fulfilling the purpose for which we are here on Earth. And have you heard of Viktor Frankl? Any of you? Yeah? It's quite popular, right? Well, he's a survivor from the Auschwitz concentration camp and also a former professor of neurology and psychiatry. Yeah. And he created the so-called logotherapy. Logo is the Greek word for meaning. So logotherapy is a school. It's a school of therapy that focuses on the meaning of human existence as well as on a man's search for such a meaning. So according to logotherapy, this striving to find a meaning in one's life is the primary motivational force in men. And Frankl has seen and lived that to the extreme in the concentration camp. So in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, this one here, he shares that any attempt to restore a man's inner strength in the camp had first to succeed in showing him some future goal. And he quotes Nietzsche, "He who has a why to live for can bear with almost any how." And that connects to a curious case that he shares in his book about unprecedented increase in the death rate in the camp. In the week between Christmas 1944 and the New Year's Eve 1945, And, well, he quotes the chief doctor from the camp when he says that, in his opinion, this big increase was not due to harder working conditions or the deterioration of food supplies, change of weather, or new epidemics. It was simply that the majority of prisoners had lived in the naive hope that they would be home again for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And as the time drew near and there was no encouraging news, the prisoners lost courage and disappointment overcame them. So this is just one of the many stories that he shares in his book of how those people that had something to live for, that had a higher meaning or had still a task they wanted to fulfill in life, they were the most apt to survive, even more apt than those who seemed stronger, physically stronger or healthier. So what is meaning? What does it mean, this thing that works, as Frankl says, as the biggest motivational force in a man? So Dick Kies, an American labrie worker, in a lecture over the theology of meaning, he describes meaning as anything that makes life important, that answers the question, what is it meant for? He brings then the image of a watch. What is a good watch? To know that, we need first to ask, what is a watch made for? So it can be a beautiful object, but if it's not showing you the right time, and that's the purpose of it, it's probably not a good watch. So to think about a life's meaning, we need to ask ourselves, what is a human being made for? What gives importance to human life? And the problem here is that in order to answer these questions, we tend to look inward. To find one's purpose, we are told to look inside. So let's go back to 1480. That's roughly the time when the first watch was invented. You can find other theories, but that's what the one I found. So at that time, people were probably organizing their days according to the sun, when they would wake up and work and go back to bed and things like that. So just by seeing a watch, they wouldn't know what it was meant for. They would need to ask the inventor, the creator, what is this object made for? And Rick Warren, in the book The Purpose-Driven Life, says that the search for the purpose of life has puzzled people for thousands of years. That's because we typically begin at the wrong starting point, ourselves. So contrary to what many popular books, movies, and seminars tell you, you won't discover your life's purpose or your life's meaning by looking within yourself. You didn't create yourself, so there is no way you can tell yourself what you were created for. In other words, there is no calling without a caller. And we'll get back to this and move forward to the concept of calling. But I want to add here also the concept that a philosopher called Byung-Chul Han, I'm probably saying, yesterday Jamie was at the lecture in Utrecht and she said it completely different than I did. So I'm sorry. I'm going to show, well, that's his name, so you can pronounce the way you know you're Korean. So he's a South Korean philosopher, quite contemporary, and he has published some very popular books lately. And this is quite a short but very dense book. And, well, he brings this concept of the burnout society and helping us to understand the society in which we live, that repeatedly tells us to create my own identity, that nothing is impossible and I can choose whatever I want to be and whatever I want to do. So he calls the society from the 21st century the achievement society, no longer the disciplinary society that would be like before this time, which before was guided by rules and norms, institutions, a society of limitations, of prohibition. And now, the limitless power is the positive modal verb of the achievement society. So the expression, yes, we can, it expresses this positive character of our time. The subject of this late modernity time no longer submits himself to any compulsory work. His guidelines are no longer obedience, law, or the fulfillment of duty, but freedom and goodwill. From work, he expects, above all, pleasure. He must be an entrepreneur of himself. But this freedom from the other is not only giving him liberation and emancipation, as one was expecting for. Actually, the subject from the Achievement Society finds himself in new constraints, and he becomes the oppressor and the oppressed. So victim and aggressor can no longer be distinguished. So this called freedom to self-regulate becomes the very instrument of self-violence, leading, in his opinion, to a society of burnout and depression. So he says that the depressive is not full at the limit, but he is tired of the effort of being himself all the time. And his complaint that he can't do anything, that nothing is possible, finds its place in a society where everything is possible. So it's overwhelming. And the burnout, according to him, is also the outcome of this competition with our own selves, where we find ourselves forced to constantly overcome our own performance. There's no limit to that. So this is a very short explanation for this very dense book. If you want to read further, I really recommend it. Just to illustrate it, maybe to bring it to the more practical side, I ask you, how many times have you read the phrase, you are who you want to be, your body, your rules, or you can do whatever you want, only you can say who you are, and so on. One recent example, have any of you watched this movie, the Enola Holmes 2 in Netflix? No? Okay. Well, if you want to, there's 2 hours of this speech, if you can bear it, 2 hours of this kind of a speech. Well, me and Arthur, we were discussing it after watching and saying how it was sad to see an important real story that talks about the well-being of workers in an industrial society, kind of reduced in a poor narrative and this repetitive agenda forced upon the story itself. And also, working with fashion and marketing, I've run into these concepts much more than I wanted. And, so we are told over and over that we are ourselves to go after our own idea of meaning, of purpose, of identity, to build it up for ourselves, to make our own rules. And, that's incredibly tiring. That's what Byung-Chul Han is telling us in his book. And Augustine, in the book Confessions, a long time ago, had already discovered and written something in this direction when he says, you have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find rest in you. Okay, so far we've seen that there is a trend in business and work environments to talk about purpose. We've seen that it is so because as human beings we long for meaning. We desire to have significance, to fulfill a purpose. We've seen that even purpose can keep someone alive. But also realize that the inner search for meaning is actually draining or crushing us. It's not freeing or life-giving as we were expecting it to be. So now we can move on to the concept of calling. So if we cannot find our own purpose just inside of us, we are going to look it outside of us. And again, if there's a calling, there is someone who calls. And I have to confess here, personally, for a long time, I felt a bit, uncomfortable with this word, calling. So whenever someone would ask me about my story or even, why are you here at La Brie? Why did you end up here? And I would usually try to find a replacement for the word call because, it felt uncomfortable. Saying God called me or I've had a calling or I'm responding to his call, something of the sort, made me insecure. And sometimes I felt it sounded like I was boasting, someone who has a call from God is special. It's reserved for sacred work or something like that. Or sometimes I could feel it was nonsense or people will not believe it or something of the sort. But both of these feelings, I think they come from a misinterpretation of the word calling. So now, one very important thing about calling. If there is something I would like you to hold on from this lecture is this, that if you are a Christian, you already have a calling. you have already been given a calling. As Christians, our main call is to glorify God. In Micah 6:8, we read that the Lord had already showed us what is good, what he requires from us. He has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God? Another book that I read for this lecture was the book Redeeming Your Time from Jordan Rainer. And he takes these two verses here and he summarizes like this. The purpose of our lives, the reason why we were created and saved, is to do good works that bring forth the kingdom of God and give him glory in this process. And another concept from this Brazilian author, and I think most of you won't be able to read this book. Maybe just Gaetan, he can read it, because it's not in English yet. It's about work, purpose, and rest. And he in this book, he brings the concept of shalom as a core idea to understand calling or purpose. So shalom means peace, but not peace as just the absence of war. Or, for instance, shalom is fullness of life, is where God inhabits and reigns. And Bernardo says that God called us to the maintenance of his shalom, established in creation and in the anticipation of the perfect shalom that will be consumed in the new creation. So participating with God in producing shalom in the world is a calling for all humankind, not just Christians, as I said before, but all humankind. And it's a calling that should bring direction to our work, but not just our work. Calling is not only about work, but it's about the whole of our lives. So as Os Guinness says, calling is the truth that God calls us to himself so decisively that everything we are, everything we do, and everything we have is invested with a special devotion and dynamism lived out as a response to his summons and service. So I highlighted here the part everything we are, because I believe an important aspect of our calling is not about only what we do, but who we are becoming, our process of sanctification, of being godly people. Andy Patton, he's a former Labrie worker, he worked in the British Labrie, and he has a lecture over calling and vocation, where he reflects on the Psalm 19 that says, "The heavens declare his glory." So that is our ultimate purpose. And that's a purpose not only ours, but of the whole creation, the heavens also. So we are meant to bear God's image, to be godly. Now, of course, you're going to ask me, okay, but how? How do I do that personally? How do I, Mika, glorify God in my daily life and especially through my work? That is our topic today. So both Os Guinness and Andy, they talk about similar concepts with different words. Os Guinness calls it the primary and secondary calling, and Andy puts it as cosmic or higher calling and the local calling or callings. So our primary calling as followers of Christ is by him, to him, and for him. First and foremost, we are called to someone, to God, not to something as motherhood or the study of law or politics or teaching, or to somewhere as Eckenville or Brazil. Our secondary calling, considering who God is as a sovereign, is that everyone, everywhere, and in everything should think, speak, live, and act entirely for him. We can, therefore, properly say, as a matter of a secondary calling, that we are called to homemaking, or to the practice of law, or to art history. But these and other things are always the secondary, never the primary calling. So they are callings rather than the calling. They are our personal answer to God's address, our response to God's summons. Secondary callings matter, but only because the primary calling matters most. Andy uses the core cosmic or higher calling to basically say the same thing. And as we said before, it's a call for all humankind and the whole creation to glorify God. We are called to bear his image. And that's our first priority. So actually, I don't know. Actually, he suggests that we usually have it the other way around. And I don't know where he gets these numbers from. Maybe he's guessing. But he says that we spend 80% of our questions of or of our time thinking about the local calling and 20% thinking about the primary calling. And he suggests that it should be the opposite, maybe. Well, now to go on, we're going to make a break again, and I'll show you another video. Have you ever heard of Simon Sinek? Yeah? Have you? Yeah? Okay. Well, this is a very high-speed
idea. I call it the golden circle. This little idea explains why some organizations and some leaders are able to inspire where others aren't. Every single person, every single organization on the planet knows what they do 100%. Some know how they do it. But very, very few people or organizations know why they do what they do. By why, I mean what's your purpose, what's your cause, what's your belief, and why should anyone care? The inspired leaders and the inspired organizations all think, act, and communicate from the inside out. Let me give you an example. If Apple were like everyone else, a marketing message from them might sound like this. We make great computers. They're beautifully designed, simple to use, and user-friendly. Want to buy one? Yeah. That's how most marketing is done. That's how most sales is done. We say what we do. We say how we're different or how we're better. And we expect some sort of behavior, a purchase, a vote, something like that. Here's how Apple actually communicates. Everything we do, we believe in challenging the status quo. We believe in thinking differently. The way we challenge the status quo is by making our products beautifully designed, simple to use, and user-friendly. Want to buy one? People don't buy what you do, people buy why you do it. The goal is not to do business with anybody, with everybody who needs what you have. The goal is to do business with people who believe what you believe. Again, the goal is not just to sell people who need what you have, the goal is to sell to people who believe what you believe. If you hire people just because they can do a job, they'll work for your money. But if you hire people who believe what you believe, they work for you with blood and sweat and tears. Something called the law of diffusion of innovation. The first 2.5% of our population are our innovators. The next 13.5% of our population are our early adopters. The next 34% are your early majority, your late majority, and your laggards. And if you want mass market success or mass market acceptance of an idea, you cannot have it until you achieve this tipping point between 15 and 18% market penetration. So it's this here, this little gap that you have to close. Because you see, the early majority will not try something until someone else has tried it first. And these guys, the innovators and the early adopters, they're more comfortable making those intuitive decisions that are driven by what they believe about the world and not just what product is available. These are the people who stood online for 6 hours to buy an iPhone when they first came out. Leaders hold a position of power or authority. But those who lead inspire us. And it's those who start with why that have the ability to inspire those around them or find others who inspire them. Thank you very much.
So this was the concept of the golden circle in a very high speed. Yeah. So this is one of the first videos and the first moments when Simon started this talk about the golden circle. And you can see that here he's talking about the why to sell more. That's his main, maybe that was also his target at the moment. And from that moment on, he has written other books and other materials, and he went further with this idea, also applying it to our personal why, to find your personal why. So he talks, about finding a personal why as a means to be happy, to find the right place to work, to work with the right people, to be successful, and to change how you live and to change the world. So you're gonna see that talk in his website also. So I want to provoke you. Isn't he right? No way. If you would know why we live, why we were created, and you could live accordingly, wouldn't that impact our actions, how we live daily, what we pursue, and how we impact the world we live in? Let me add other things that Simon brings in his work. One, we don't invent our why, we discover it. Two, a clear purpose inspires people and brings people together. That comes from our DNA, the need to belong, to have a system of belief and values in common with other people. 3, we need to be consistent with our why. Our actions and products, they need to point to this purpose. 4, it will help you in your decision-making process. 5, it brings loyalty. So let's now try to grasp these concepts and check how they fit or not into a biblical worldview. Let's draw here the so-called golden circle. So the why, here we already have our ultimate purpose, to glorify God. The how is about our deeds and actions. It's how we employ our talents and gifts, how we respond to the opportunities that is given to us, how we interact with people and we live our daily lives. And the what, it's the fruits, or our character also, who we are becoming. So God gives us our ultimate purpose, and He also gives us a place and a time where to fulfill them. He gives us opportunities, people, talents, and gifts. To this, we are called to respond with our actions and deeds back to Him, to His glory. Viktor Frankl says that as each situation in life represents a challenge to man and a problem for him to solve. In a word, each man is questioned by life, and he can only answer by life, for his own life. To life, he can only respond by being responsible. So my point here with this circle is that maybe we can look at these three categories within three different time frames. So the why being the past, something we have already been given. The how being the present, our response again to God's calling in our daily choices and activities. And the what pointing to the future, to the fruits of our actions, which ultimately is not exactly in our control, but it's the Spirit who will bring them. So this parallel here shows me that it's actually one layer where I should focus, where I'm called to respond, to act, to live in, and that is the present. That is the place and time where we can choose our house, how we will respond to the circumstances, to the opportunities around us. So the Bible tells us that no branch can bear fruit by itself. And the fruit of the Spirit is given from Him in us while we abide in Jesus. So again, that brings us to the present. What shall we do? Abide in Christ today, responding to His calling to be God's people, to be godly, to work for the shalom of His kingdom. And the fruits are His, and He'll give them as a father that keeps His promises and gives good things to His children. So my invitation for you today is start with how. Well, we already have the most important why, the thing that people spend a lot of time. Actually, Simon has another book called Finding Your Why, and then he brings a whole method that you can go through to find your own personal why. So, yeah, my provocation here is that we already have our most important why. And sometimes it's not easy or even useful to keep looking or digging for a secondary why or a secondary calling. And here, let me just make a parenthesis, because if we would talk just one-to-one about this topic, I would probably, what we could give as a counsel would be different from each person. So there's not exactly like, no, just focus on the primary calling and forget the secondary or the other way around. It really differs on your story, on where you are and or your opportunities and things like that. So, well, but my therapist helped me in this lecture, and I told her I would give her the credit for what I'm going to say now, that when I say that sometimes it is through a collection of hows that we find a why. So how do we engage with the reality around us? How do we engage with people? How do we use our time well? That all of this together can sometimes unveil a secondary calling. Quoting Jordan Rainer again, he says that God gives us the freedom to choose how exactly we will contribute to His mission. As long as you are obeying God's commandments, we cannot make a wrong decision. So God's sovereignty gives us courage to simply make a choice. And I heard once that through a biblical perspective, to be successful is to be faithful. We have to remember that we won't be judged or saved by our deeds in the first place. we are all saved by grace alone, and grace that we receive through faith. So keeping our eyes on the target, on the center, Jesus Christ, is to be faithful and therefore successful. Doing that, our actions will be consistent with our purpose and will bear the right fruits, abiding in the vine. So, now actually, Jordan Raynor's book is about using your time well, making good use of your time, living intentionally. And for that purpose, I would like to bring now what can sound as a counter idea of what I just said, but I don't see it as opposite, but as complementary. What we just saw here, the circles and the focus on how, I see it as the basis, as the cornerstone from where we can build on. So, although I agree with Andy that we should be spending more time and effort and making questions about our primary calling, discerning possible secondary callings can be a blessing and incredibly productive and helpful. So it can help us to live in an intentional way, to use well the time and resources we are given. It helps us to make decisions, to say no to the absurd amount of opportunities and ideas or dreams we can have in a very overloaded age. I think Rob can maybe correct me, but I think we follow this here at Labrie. Labrie has a document called Labrie Statements, and where the basis of our work is settled, where what we believe, why do we do what we do. So I think this document probably has helped the leaders in many other times to make decisions, to sometimes to say no to opportunities or offers that could be very attractive and could be very good, but they could be good for other institutions, but not be building up on the Labrie idea or the ethos of the community. So let's think also about Jesus' life. In Mark chapter 1, we read that after many healings and miracles, the people of Galilee, they wanted more. So the disciples went after Jesus and they told him, "All men are seeking for you." But Jesus says no. He says, "Let us go into the next towns, that I may preach there also, for therefore came I forth." So Jesus said no because he was already committed to a bigger yes. As all of us, Jesus had a finite time to finish the work God has given him to do. Kevin DeYoung, in the book Crazy Busy, says that Jesus knew the difference between the urgent and the important. He understood that all the good things he could do weren't necessarily the things he should do. If Jesus had to live with the human limitations, we would be fools to think that we haven't. The people on this planet that end up doing nothing are those that never realized that they cannot do everything. So it's again the paralysis that comes with the limitless choices and possibilities. And the call of Jesus provides the priorities that are essential for a focused life in an overloaded age. So with this in mind, I want to redeem a bit the idea of seeking for purposeful work. The desire to do work that matches your purpose, that matches first of all our primary calling, but also our secondary calling. So this match seems to be good, seems to be efficient and helpful to make choices in our lives. As Simon Sinek defends, the clarity of purpose also brings people together. And it's good to find a job, for instance, in a place which is transparent and with its values and mission. So a helpful way for me of dealing with the abstraction of such a word as purpose, which, as we've seen, can lead to this unending spiral of looking inward, is to look for the concrete things around us. So the circumstances that surround me, the opportunities that are given to me, the place where I live, the language I speak, the training I have, the things that I do well, and so on. John Calvin says that the Lord bids each one of us in all life's actions to look to his calling, for he knows with what great restlessness human nature flames, how its ambition longs to embrace various things at once, and that no one may thoughtlessly transgress his limit, he has named these various kinds of living callings. Therefore, each individual has his own kind of living assigned to him by the Lord as a sort of sentry post, so that he may not heedlessly wander throughout life. Okay, so I know that many of you will tell me that, it's not so easy to find a good fit, that you might know already where your strengths are and where do you find your pleasure working with and what brings you excitement, but still cannot find a good match in a job. So don't take this as an absolute answer. Again, I think it can really differ from person to person and case to case. But it's important to keep in mind that vocation is a broader concept than work. We tend to think about work only when there is a wage involved. In our culture, to work is primarily to earn money, to do something with a financial reward. So let's try to avoid this thought and think about vocation in a broader way. You can find fulfillment in what you do taking care of your family, in your voluntary work in a shelter, in a church ministry, in the time you spend gardening, or in the errands you run to a neighbor in need, in a hobby job, among other options. So, of course, usually our paid work is where we spend most of the time we have. So it does matter, of course, what you do. I would rarely tell you if you can change, if you can find something that matches you better, to stay at somewhere that does not match you. But yeah, let's think about Paul's example. He was a tent maker and a missionary. And tent making here cannot be read as secondary, as something he only did to earn money, only to support his mission. He does talk about how blessed are those that toil, that work to help others, to help the community, to have the money to do that, and he did that. And that is part of what he is doing through his tent-making work. But it is complementary also with his call of teaching and preaching. Through his work, he is witnessing God's love and grace. He might be modeling a good way of working, of doing, making tents. And also, God is using this to bring him into contact with people, as Priscilla and Aquila, as we read in the Bible. So, thinking also about Jesus, he was a carpenter for how many years? And can we say these years were less important? I don't think so. I don't think we can. So, as we read in 1 Corinthians 15, nothing we do for the Lord is useless. And we may not understand fully now how our work is contributing to the kingdom of God. As the decades that Jesus was working as a carpenter, it's almost nothing written in the Bible about it, right? I wanted to know more about it, but we don't. It keeps as a mystery for us. So, yeah, how my work is actually working towards the kingdom can be also a little bit of mystery until the Lord Jesus returns. We won't see everything yet. But again, we are given brains and minds, and of course, to some extent, we can and we should think about what we do. How does my work help in developing creation, restoring shalom? So, for instance, if you are a forest guard, it's important, your work is important to preserve an ecosystem, to bring order, to keep peace. How do I bear witness to God through the work I do? Your work, for instance, as a baker, can be a testimony to the creative God if it's done with beauty and care. How do I serve people and society? If you work in customer service, for instance, your work is important because you can treat people with dignity, you can save their precious time, and you can treat them as human beings. So we won't be able to cover today how do we find our own vocations, or what each profession can, how each profession can work for the kingdom. That's something you have to do it for yourself maybe later. But I would like to add some important things about the theology of work that can help us to better frame it, or to have discernment and, direct our search. So I'll be quoting here another Labrie worker from England called Joe Berico, And he has a lecture on what is good work. What does it mean to do good work? And he brings different narratives in which we can put ourselves in. And, well, the one he brings as the complete biblical narrative has these four chapters: creation, fall, redemption, and restoration. So starting in creation, God himself is a worker. He rested from his work in the seventh day, and he created man in his image, workers and creative beings. We were created to be co-workers with God, to have responsibility. So remembering what we said about calling, we are not here primarily for ourselves, but rather to cooperate with God in the development of his creation. So work is also not a post-fall condition, but is already there before the fall. It is cursed with the fall, as you can read in the Bible, as all creation is. And Joel says that when Adam and Eve sinned, they left their original vocation as stewards of creation and became independent entrepreneurs, so free to pursue their own plans, their own ideas. And the motives behind work are broken with the fall. In this narrative, when Jesus comes to save us, his work is restorative and affects all areas of creation. So it gives us also a sense of continuity. He comes to inaugurate, to begin a new kingdom, which will still come in its fullness. In the meanwhile, our labor is not in vain. It's not going to disappear. We don't know exactly how that will be. We are just given some hints in the Bible. So this story starts at a garden, but in Apocalypse 21, I think, we see a city, the New Jerusalem, and that shows development, potential unfolding. So going forward, placing ourselves in this story reminds us that we were created to work. We are stewards of creation, that we are representatives of God here, and we are given the gifts and talents to carry that out. Work was created before the fall. So back then, meaningful work, for instance, couldn't mean just saving souls. There was no need for salvation yet. But there was already work, good work. Now, after the fall, we are also called to join in his restorative work that affects both our own restoration and that of the whole creation. And we shouldn't reduce that only to work that will directly share the gospel, something we can hear sometimes in some Christian circles. Martin Luther says that God is working in disguise in humanity through people as his mask or his hands. So even though God could feed us directly, and he has done that in history, he chooses to do it through the work of the farmer, of the truck driver, the baker, the chef, the people that work in the supermarket, and so on, so many others. So to get your daily bread, we need all of these people working, doing the work of God. And although, of course, full of flaws, because we live in a fallen world, every work can be a calling from God. Every work is a way that God is at work in the world. Bernardo Cho, the Brazilian I quoted before, he makes a difference between an individual purpose and personal purpose. So society today puts a lot of emphasis in the individual. But our callings are never individual. Our personal callings are to serve God and people. So according to the biblical narrative, from creation to restoration, work has little to do with individual fulfillment. Of course, it can be very positive and satisfying to excel in what we do, to find pleasure in it. But what fills our activities with purpose and meaning is the fact that God has called us to the maintenance of his shalom. And there is no shalom if I'm the only one winning or flourishing. So you probably heard the phrase, God has wonderful plans for you, right? Before someone telling you that. And we tend to hear that in a very selfish or egotistic way, as if God is designing his plans with you in the center. Well, actually, he is inviting us to take part in his story, in his plans. So my story runs into his story and not the opposite. And that's where we have to be careful with the temptation of turning the order around, of putting a secondary calling above the primary, the higher calling. focusing on the higher calling instead of the local one helps us to keep our hearts in place, keep us from the danger of our own egos and idols. So, yeah, the question from the title of my lecture, do we do purpose-driven work or work-driven purpose? Is our work bigger than our purpose? Is it swelling the whole of our purpose? Or is work just a part of our purpose, of our, where we find our meaning in life? Timothy Keller says that when we put our own self as the core reason to work, and put our worth in our work, it can fall to either of these two sides. If you are successful, it goes to your head. If you are a failure, it goes to your heart. So both can destroy us, and it's different from God's original plan. So when we put our calling in our heart's center, it will come out as an idol. And in order to help us avoiding this misplacing of work and purpose, I would like to share a piece of an article that I found in this research about purpose-driven work from this consultancy company called McKinsey. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's a worldwide known big company, very influential. And the article is from 2021, and the title is Help Your Employees Find Purpose or Watch Them Leave. And they made a research in 2020 showing that about 70% of the respondents want their sense of purpose to be defined by their work. And at the same time, 18% of the same people gets the sense of purpose from their work. And 62% of this, they get some purpose from work, but they want more. So any business-minded person will see these numbers and think, opportunity. There's a gap here, right? And basically, the article goes on talking about how important it is to take this matter serious, to have engaged and happy employees, and to see that in your company's results. They are also quite honest about how much can a company influence in a person's own purpose. So check this diagram that they brought to show the relationship about individual purpose and work. So the big circle, the dark blue one, it's the purpose outside of work, or a person's whole purpose, the big purpose. And the middle circle is the share of this big purpose a person can get from its work. And the smaller circle is the purpose from the organization. So here also at the bottom, they bring these three examples of like three different people and how they are aligned with the company's purpose or not. The last one, Catherine, is like completely misaligned. And this one is like the ideal situation that they are showing. But let me read this quote for you from the article. Employers should view this middle circle as a target they strive to understand and meet. They should influence the expansion of this circle if they can. The innermost circle, purpose from the organization, depicts the company's means of influence. It's the only aspect of purpose that organizations control. How so? By establishing a corporate purpose that considers the company's role and contribution to society, and by providing employees with meaningful ways to reflect on the company's efforts and their impact. Okay, so as I said, they do see the boundaries where the field in which they can have some control and possibilities. And as Simon Sinek says, it's from your clear purpose and consistency that you inspire people to come with you. But I'll read a bit more. As a company leader, you want to see the organization's relatively small sphere of influence expand to match the size of the employee's own sense of purpose from work. The middle circle. The closer the company gets, the more fulfilled the employee is. Moreover, a closer match earns the company more opportunities for employees to seek and expect more purpose from work and to feel more aligned with the organization's purpose. So here is my call to watch out, because some people, some ideas may campaign for the idea of stretching the work purpose circle until the very edge, until the big circle, so far that it gets the whole of your life. So the more purpose the employee gets from work, and the more aligned it is with the company's purpose, the happier he will be, and the better results will come. And today, that is not done as it was in what Byung-Chul Han called the disciplinary society, through rules, norms, or even rewards. In the achievement society, it comes many times with a very attractive packaging of how happy you will be, how meaningful work you do, how you will be contributing to change the world. And yeah, beautiful, nice things. But in the meanwhile, it can be reducing your whole life to work and therefore making an idol out of it.
In consulting, we refer to that as a golden cage.
Golden cage. That's good. Yeah.
You are happy because everything is provided by your employer. Mm-hmm. Actually, also
encaged. Yeah, yeah. It's very. I didn't know that concept. Yeah, that word, golden cage. Yeah, the golden circle can become a golden cage then. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I'm coming to the end here. I'm eager to hear your thoughts on it. But just to add another outcome that McKinsey brought from the research, they found this big difference from finding your purpose fulfilled at work or not, according to the position you have at work. So here we see that 85 of the executives or upper management say they do find their purpose in their jobs. They are finding that. But on the opposite side, 85% of the frontline managers and frontline employees, they don't find the opportunities to find their purpose at work. So, of course, there are many problems hidden in here, and we won't go into all of them, but I could also imagine that these many people in the left side, they also can struggle to see purpose in their daily activities. We get so, our work in this society we do, it's so divided in specific tasks that we don't see the big picture or what is this for, what is it meant for. And sometimes some work that are wrongly labeled as less important. So placing yourself in God's narrative, understanding the nature of the primary and the most important call of our lives, bring us to value all work that is done for the Lord, all work that helps to keep and develop creation, all work that serves people, all work that helps people and communities to flourish. Oz Guinness talks about it in his book. Calling transforms life so that even the menial and commonplace are invested with the splendor of the ordinary. And he quotes Oswald Chambers saying that it does require the supernatural grace of God to live 24 hours in every day as a saint, to go through drudgery, as a disciple of Jesus. It is inbred in us that we have to do exceptional things for God, but we have not. We have to be exceptional in the ordinary things. So, yeah, just maybe summarizing and bringing my last recommendations, and we can talk further about it. My invitation for you today is to hold fast to our primary calling, to spend time in the house of your life. And that is enough to work with purpose, to obey the Lord in the ordinary. And in the meanwhile, keep your minds working and open through your daily activities, through the opportunities the Lord brings you, through your gifts and talents. You can choose secondary callings as your personal response to his primary calling. Do that in order to be intentional with your life, to use well your hours, your resources. But remember that to follow God's calling is an invitation to trust him, not an excuse to take control of your life. If you have found a secondary calling for you, great. Now work it for the glory of God and hold it lightly. If you haven't, keep doing good deeds, keep doing good. And let your work be driven by the purpose of glorifying the Lord. Keep abiding in the vine, and he will bring the fruit. And maybe while you do that, when you cannot really express a secondary call, what your personal calling is yet, he might reveal it to you. So that's it. That's my message. And